This morning you said, Johnny, that you always like a nice tagline. How about that one? It does not pay to be honest. The reason why I start my sermon with that is because some time ago, I was in the situation where I had to make a decision whether I should be honest or not embarrass my boss. So if I was going to be honest, my boss would be embarrassed. Kept quiet and lied about a mistake that was made, it would be cool. And before you say it's easy, man, you always be honest. Honesty pays, as they say. Let me just give you the background. My team and I were working for 9 months on a contract, R1 billion contract. And just before it had to be signed, we got a new CIO. Now, to convince somebody to sign a R1 billion contract overnight is not easy. And my boss and I put together a presentation, and it was my first meeting with the CIO as well, so I wanted to give a good impression. And we were going through the numbers, and suddenly I realized the business case numbers were wrong. So I was sitting there thinking, do I actually own up and say that numbers are wrong, or just let it slide? Knowing my boss, he would have preferred me keep quiet because impressions are important to him. He wants to go far in his career. In my case, I could have just let it slide because the CIO was seeing a lot of people, she was seeing a lot of numbers. But on the other hand, who knows, she might be taking notes. So I was stuck between a rock and a hard place, what to do. And the dilemma comes from twofold dilemma. On the one hand, we all want to be liked. We all want people's recognition and appreciation. This is what the Bible talks about, seeking the honor of man. And on the other hand, my boss and the CIO hold sway of my career. They could decide what happens to me next. And if I didn't deal with the situation properly, I could either, in the time when people were being retrenched, let go, or kept where I was. So this is what the Bible talks about, is fear of man. So you've got these two things. They're actually the same side of two sides of one coin. It's not a modern-day dilemma. If you think back to Genesis 2 and 3, when Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden, the Bible said they were naked, but they were not ashamed. And the minute they ate of the tree of good and evil, what does the word say? Their eyes were opened and they knew they were naked. They sewed themselves aprons. So why would Adam and Eve become ashamed the minute they knew about good and evil? Because at that point in time, up to that point, God was judge. Thereafter, people became judges. They were able to judge each other based on anything. Perceptions, image. And imagine me being Adam. I'm standing there, and suddenly I see Eve, and I start comparing herself to myself. I start judging her. That's not the problem. The problem is, I then realize, like I'm judging her, she's probably judging me. And suddenly, I become ashamed because I'm at the mercy of somebody else's judgment. And that point in time, fear of man, seeking the honor of man, into the world. We see this a lot more clearer in John chapter 12, where, funny enough, you also spoke about Lazarus this morning. Just to setting the scene, it was Passover. Just before John chapter 12, Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. And the people were flooding from all over the place to go and see Lazarus because they heard about Lazarus being raised from the dead and they wanted to see. And they started honoring Jesus because he had raised Lazarus from the dead. And that's partially why, when he entered Jerusalem, why he was honored by the people. Now, the Pharisees did not like this at all because they were losing honor. If we look at the John 12, 19, it says, the Pharisees therefore said amongst themselves, you see that you are accomplishing nothing. Look, the world has gone after him. So they became jealous of the honor that Jesus was getting from the people, to the point they actually wanted to go and kill Lazarus to take away the evidence that he was risen from, had risen from the dead. But if you imagine the people lining the streets, this is not just normal people. Amongst them, you would also have found rulers and people of power. And these people of power, some of them were believers. It says in verse 42, "Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God." See, in this verse, these two verses, you see fear of man, honor of man. The rulers knew, wanted the honor of people. They were seeking the praise of men. But if they were not allowed in the synagogues, what people would honor them? At that time, being able to enter the synagogue was a big part of being a ruler, being in power. So they feared the Pharisees. And this resulted in them not professing their belief. Ultimately, if you think about fear, look at that. The center of that is me, myself, and I. Big I. The person in the middle that is actually cared about. And you say, well, you don't have this problem. You don't have this problem because you're not a leader, aspiring to leadership, looking to be exalted. I want to challenge you to dig a bit deeper. Because the minute you start doing things, making decisions based on what people think, how they can influence you, then you're having the same problem. Either fear of man, the honor of man. Now, in my case, it's very easy for me to tell you. Funny enough, you might not realize it, but I'm an extrovert. Okay? I'm an extrovert. And being an extrovert, I crave for recognition. I crave for people's attention. I want to be in the center of attention. That is what part of being an extrovert is. It's just how we are. It's not wrong. The problem is that when that becomes your sole purpose, that is the problem. Now, fortunately, I know this is my weakness. And God has kept me, I want to use the word humble, in sometimes very funny ways. Many years ago, I was still in the Dutch Reformed Church, and I was elected to be an elder. Now, in this congregation, they still wore black suits and white ties. Now, I refused to wear a black suit and a white tie. And when the minister and the chief elder came to me and said, they want me to be an elder, I said, but there's one condition. I'm not prepared to wear the outfit. I don't have to talk about the reasons now, but it partially is to do with people wearing the suit as a badge of honor rather than what God wants from me. So the minister and the chief elder said, no problem. It's okay. They don't mind me not wearing it. The problem is, nobody else in the congregation knew this. But as the Sunday drew near, when we had to actually go in front of the pulpit and do the faith of this office, the oath of the office, I became more and more nervous about what the congregation was going to say about the fact that I'm getting up there, not wearing a suit and a white tie, and what are they going to say? Small community, soos hulle sê in Afrikaans, hulle gaan maar lekker skinder. So the morning of that Sunday, I decided, well, if I'm not going to wear a suit and a tie, at least I need to look spit spot. So I said to Arnie, my wife, I said, please cut my hair. So I handed her the razor. She took it, and not noticing that I didn't put the number 2 comb on, I just left it open. She went, back of my head, leaving a big white spot in the back of my head. And this was quite a while back, so because I had a lot more hair and it was darker. So you could clearly see it. Anybody who's cut hair knows what it means. So I was stuck there. I was thinking, what am I going to do now? I've got to go stand in front of the pulpit. I'm already without a suit and a tie. Now I've got this hole in the back of my head. I can't shave it all off because the number 0 would look like a skinhead. Right? And I can't leave it like that. What now? I mean, just it's amazing that at that point in time, the fact that I was, I mean, there's nothing I could do. I would have been the center of attention, and people would have been talking about me, whether I wore a suit and tie or not. Didn't matter anymore. Didn't matter what people were going to say about me. Because I had no choice. Nothing you could do about a hole in the back of your head. So Annie and I, we patched up with mascara and made it look darker. And it sort of worked out, but the whole time we were standing, and it's not as if we were far away. We were standing right in front, and the other elders were standing right behind me. So I'm sure they saw this. Anyway. There's just ways for God to have worked at me about me seeking the honor of man. Because that is part of me. And I'm grateful for you all sitting here. But it's also part of God's plan to keep me humble. Because it is something about filling a church and feeding that you've accomplished some sort of fact that people come and hear you speak. That is part of me, and I recognize that it's not what God wants. If we go back to John 12, just look a bit further. Before we look at John 12, I just want to say, it's not just about extroverts. You might be a person that would love to just slip quietly out of church, whatever room, not be noticed by anybody, sit in the corner, be quiet. You are the same problem. Fear of man. You have the same problem, it's just a different facet of it. And I can mention a couple of other examples. Fear of rejection. Being highly competitive. Trying to one-up other people. When you measure yourself against the success of others, it's awesome. When you're reluctant to speak to somebody, when you know God has told you to speak to that person, fear of man. When you want to always wear the designer labels, the outfits, drive the best car, the honor of people. When you're worshiping, and you're so focused on, I hope the people got here, false I sing. That is a big problem for me. I know that. That is fear of man. When you are called up to the front after the church, you know God has called you up. You know also when you come up, people can see that you have an issue. These are all examples of where fear of man or seeking the honor of man has become primary to you. And approved by men. So we see here the Bible does want us to hear what people think about us. But it's different. Seeking honor or being fearing men is different to finding favor. It's a bit of a contradiction, yes. We must care what people think, but we shouldn't be influenced by what they think. It's different. I try to sketch something here. Hopefully it works. So, on the one hand, see the words aren't too well. The bottom here, when you seek the honor from man, it's in its essence about elevating yourself. When you try and we find favor from God, it's in essence about sacrifice of self. And finding favor from both God and men is about removing yourself from the equation. Taking the self, the I, the big I, out of the equation. And pointing to God. So you must be the conduit to God in your actions. That's where the favor comes from. I'll show it a bit better in John 12. But as I said, the rulers were believers. They were afraid of the Pharisees. If you look at previously I just read in verse 42 about the fact that they were seeking praise of men and they were afraid. And then verse 44 says, then Jesus cried out, I will say in exasperation, and said, he who believes in me believes not in me, but in him who sent me. And he who sees me sees him who sent me. Because if Jesus says, don't see me, it's not important who I am. He's telling the people here, right, the Pharisees, the rulers, everybody, don't see me, see the Father. If Jesus is the one saying that, Jesus of all people is removing self from the equation, how much more for us to remove ourselves from the equation? What about us? Jesus does that. And if you go back even before the start, verse 25, he says, he was teaching then, he who loves his life will lose it, he who hates his life in this world will keep it. As if on the one hand, it's like a parenthesis. Surrounded by the fact that your life is not important. It's about pointing to God. You all know this term, what will Jesus do? Now, I don't altogether subscribe to it. To me, it's more, what will make people see God? More important. Because what will Jesus do? Is about God and yourself, about what you're doing, self-improvement, becoming more holy, things like that. When you talk about what will make people see God, it's about the Great Commission. It's not about you. It's about how people can see God through your actions. So it's not about your honor anymore. It's about God's honor. You may ask, practically, how does this work? In a secular world, a non-Christian world, non-Christian values. I would go so far as a dog-eat-dog world, backstabbing, corrupt, people do whatever they want. How do we find favor in that circumstance? I mean, most people will say, well, if the environment you're in is a corrupt environment, the best way to find favor is go along with the corruption. That's not true. Christian values, strangely, are valued in a corrupt society. Just think about it. You are a corrupt person, disloyal person. You want to surround yourself with people that are not corrupt, not disloyal, because you know they went backstab. They will not come back. That's why Christian and non-Christians alike value, favor people with Christian values, people that are loyal, people that are trustworthy. Good stewards, people that serve selflessly, ultimately, people that are blessed by God. I'm telling people, there's in Genesis, Egypt was blessed because Joseph was blessed. People surround themselves, Christian and non-Christian, by Christians because they actually desire that blessing that comes from living the Christian values. In 1 Peter 2, verse 11, it says exactly that. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. So through your honorable conduct, your good works, they will glorify God. They will glorify God. It wasn't part of my original speech, but I just wanted to mention something. On this big project I did, there were a couple of other big projects like this, and all the projects were very difficult. And the project I was leading had a lot of hurdles, but we overcame all those hurdles. Somebody on one of the other projects said to one of my Christian that works for me in Malaysia, said, you know, I don't understand this. We have all these problems and issues, but you overcome them all. It's as if you've got a supernatural covering. Of course. Of course. So, exactly that. Your conduct will be observed, and God was glorified that day by a non-Christian. Just by observing what God has blessed us. So coming back to my original story where I started out, what was my decision? Now, as I said, they say honesty pays. It pays to be honest. But it's just a story that our parents and their parents and their parents told us as kids. Get us to tell the truth. Johnny, sorry, I didn't use Johnny on purpose, but Johnny, did you break the lamp? Come on. You'll be rewarded for being honest. Yes, Daddy, I broke the lamp. Now go to your room, 2 weeks of grounding, and you'll pay for the lamp out of your pocket money. But the point is, it's irrelevant whether honesty pays or not. Irrelevant. Because it's more important to do the right thing than be recognized for doing the right thing. Irrelevant. More important to do the right thing than to be recognized for being the right thing. Because doing the right thing, obviously, the focus is on God. Being recognized for doing the right thing is the hole that you don't want to go down. I found this surprising verse in Galatians 1 verse 10. Or am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. Harsh words. If I try to please man, I will not be a servant of Christ. Who amongst us, yeah, don't want to be called servants of Christ? So, continue to live Christian values in a corrupt world. You will find favor in God and men. Not conform to this world. I spoke the truth that day, and see, I wasn't very happy. Afterwards, my boss was very clearly not happy with me. But a year later, when they had an opportunity to retrench me, they asked me to stay. I chose to go because God told me it's time to go. But despite me being honest, despite me being upsetting people, giving a bad impression to wanted me to stay. That's not me. It's just because I did what I believed.